Drodzy Państwo, myślę, że rozpocznę.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time to start.
I wytłumaczę dlaczego. Witam Państwa bardzo serdecznie na kolejnym z wykładów.
So apparently the speaker will translate himself into English later on, but just in case he doesn't, the interpreter does the interpretation right now. So this is an introduction to the first of three lectures that the great guest that is going to deliver. And so Jerusalem is the topic of this festival, and when I thought about whom I should invite to this festival, Dan Bahat, Professor Dan Bahat, was the name that sprang to mind for the first before all others. When I first rang him in 6 months ago, and I spoke English, of course, by introducing myself, he categorically interrupted, and he said, "What are you speaking English to me? Speak Polish." Unfortunately, he said that he was going to speak English. Let's see. He is going to probably speak English, but what other language he is going to cover, God only knows. So I'm very, very happy that we have Professor Dan Bahat among us, who is a man that if there is a man who knows everything about Jerusalem, not just its history, it is Professor Dan Bahat. I'd like to also very cordially welcome Professor Bahat's wife, Anat Bahat. We are very happy to have both of you here.
Or maybe did you understand what I said? Not exactly. How many people do not speak Polish? Okay, so you almost understood. So what I said, that of course, as you perfectly know, the main theme of the 27th edition of the Jewish Culture Festival is Jerusalem, Yerushalayim. So when I thought whom I should first invite to Krakow, the lectures, so immediately the first name came to my mind, crossed my mind, was the name of Professor Dan Bahat, whom, by the way, I know from many, many, many years, but not personally. I knew him, and I still know him, through his books. So if there is anyone in the world who can speak about entire Israel and basically Jerusalem history, not about the, you know, different kind of aspects, but about the entire history of Yerushalayim, of Jerusalem, it is Professor Dan Bahat. So when I called him, I think half a year ago, so I introduced myself in English, and I said, "Professor Bahat, my name is Janusz Makuch, I come from Krakow." And he immediately interrupted me and said, "Why don't you speak English to me? Why don't you speak Polish?" Because Mr. Dan Bahat was born that time in Poland, in a famous city, Lwów, Lemberg. And later, Baruch Hashem, he went with his parents to Israel. Więc, drodzy Państwo, so ladies and gentlemen, it's a more than pleasure, it's a more than honor, it's it's like almost paradise to have Professor Dan Bahat in Krakow. Professor Bahat, please.
Dobre popołudniu. Mnie bardzo przykro jest, że ja nie mogę po polsku tego.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's just to say that I'm very sorry not to be able to to speak Polish, because my Polish is not good enough. But maybe next year, maybe in 2 years' time. But just to explain why I speak Polish, I mean, I was born in Lviv, and my parents went to Israel, my father in 1922, and my mother 1927, so long before the Holocaust, and they were pioneers, and they went to Palestine, and so they went to Israel, but it was there was an outbreak of malaria, my little sibling that they had died of malaria. And they went back to Poland to have me. So my mother went back to Lviv to so that that I wouldn't fall, I wouldn't succumb to malaria. So I spent in Poland maybe 1.5 to 2 months. I was just born there, and then when I was very little, I was taken to Israel. But my parents spoke Hebrew, but they when they spoke a secret between themselves, they spoke Polish, and that's how I learned Polish. So it's my Polish is highly limited. I'm very, very sorry that I cannot speak Polish to you, but it is not really going very well. So I'm now switching into English.
So I'll try to speak very slowly. Ja mówię bardzo pomało, żeby to będzie im lżej to po polsku zrobić. The first picture which we see here is Jerusalem from the air, from north to south. What you see here is the city, which is only connected or surrounded by city wall. The present one, which you see, are from the Ottoman period, from the Turkish period, 16th century, but they are all the time, they are based in many sections, they are based on earlier walls which were in the city. Jerusalem, as it was, let's say, in the time of Jesus Christ, was much bigger. It included this hill where Jerusalem was actually born in the 6th millennium BC. It is called today the City of David. It included this. It includes also this part which is called today Mount Zion. And it also included all the part which was north of the city. In other words, you can ask me, if this is the city as it was in the time of Christ, why is it so smaller and limited as we see here by the city walls? The reason is that after the destruction of the temple in the year 70 AD, the Romans founded a new city, pagan city in Jerusalem, and they gave it the name Aelia Capitolina. As the Romans built cities which will be more or less square with two long streets which are called cardo, one is here, another one is here, and a decumanus, a street which goes east-west, actually the city changed its form completely in order to comply with a plan of a Roman city. For me, just as an introduction with this picture, I would like to mention a few things. Jerusalem is divided naturally by hills into seven hills. One of them, again, the city of David, which is, as you can see from the topography, is a deep valley which passes along the city. The famous Cedron Valley, which separates the city from Mount of Olives, which is here. And so we have the city of David is one, Temple Mount is the other one. We've got the western hill, which is this one, all are limited by valleys. For example, here goes the Hinnom Valley, which is very well known in European languages by Gehennem, which is considered to be the contrary to paradise, Gehennem, because of various traditions. So we have got another hill, which is this one. This hill is called the Northwestern Hill. It is very famous because in the center of the hill, in this area, is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Schwiente Grab, very important because it is the summit of that hill. And also, for me, very important to mention, as I will, it was built over a pagan temple which was on the site. Another hill is here, which is also very well known in the Christian tradition. This hill is called Bethesda, where many of you know that one of the miracles of Jesus was to heal the paralytic in the pools of Bethesda, which are found here. Here is a very important church of St. Anne, which was, this is the site where the mother of the Virgin Mary was born according to tradition. So this is actually the city. For me, very important to mention is the fact that the city is surrounded by deep valleys wherever you go, the Kedron Valley, Hinnom Valley, Central Valley of Jerusalem, another valley which goes here, which makes the city really, the city could develop always only according to the valleys which are around. The historical city is down here in this little valley, this little hill, which is lower than all the area, but it was chosen to be a city from the very beginning, from the 6th millennium BC, because of the only perennial spring, the only spring which runs all the year around here in this area, named the Gihon Spring. Only in the days of King Hezekiah, who ruled in the 8th century BC, one of the famous kings in the Book of Kings, he extended the city and added all that as well into the city. The rest will be history, which I will describe later on. North of the city of David is the Temple Mount, to which we will divert our story now. You can see here the Temple Mount as it is today, surrounded by walls which were built by Herod the Great. Yes, very important, Herod the Great. One part of these walls are known to the world because this section here is the so-called the Wailing Wall, where the Jews are praying today, and it forms only 1/9 of the entire length of the Western Wall. We'll speak about it in the lecture the day after tomorrow, when I'll describe the excavations which we made along that wall. What is so important here is that you can see here two Muslim shrines. One of them is the Dome of the Rock, and the other one is the Aqsa Mosque, and I will describe later why they are important, why are they built, and so on. And here is actually the beginning of our story. This is the Dome of the Rock, where you can see here not only the building itself, you can see the plan of the building, you can see even something very, very interesting. Below the rock, which is protected by the hill, immediately I'll explain to you what this rock is, you can see here that it is in the center of this structure. You cannot see it clearly at this place, but under this rock is a cave. And you can see here a cave. It's better, you think? Here you can see, this is the summit of the rock, and you see here a hole. This hole is this one, which goes down. Here we have got a plan of this cave, which is under the rock. I hope it is understood. This rock is a very important factor in our history. You can see the rock, a hole in the rock, a hole, and under the rock is a cave where the Muslims pray today. This is how the rock looks like. When you go from the top of the dome, you can see down below all the columns which encircle it, and in the middle you can see the rock. Here you can see the hole which we saw before in the section going down into the cave. Now I'd like to say one thing. Many of you who may have been to Jerusalem and may have been to the Holy Sepulchre, you remember that the tomb of Jesus is in the middle of a round structure. The Dome of the Rock is a copy of that round structure, and whereas in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre you have got in the middle, you have got the tomb of Jesus, here in the middle of the dome you have this rock. Later I'll say some more words about it, but anyhow, that is what it is. Now, as we go in, you see, again, you can see the rock. I brought on purpose a color black and white to show the hole, and also to show that the whole rock is cut. As you can see, the reason is that when the Crusaders conquered Jerusalem in the 12th century, they made the Dome of the Rock, this mosque, into a church. And on the rock, they built an altar which was dedicated to Saint Nicholas, and therefore they had to cut the rock in order to make a possibility for an altar to be built on top of the rock. And so they changed completely the shape of it as it was before. Now, as we go further, we come to the beginning of the story. In the 19th century, in London was founded a company which exists to this very day, named Palestine Exploration Find, which means the foundations to explore the Palestine. And the first thing they did was to send an archaeologist to see what is there in Jerusalem. You can see it. His name was Sir Charles Warren, one of the greatest archaeologists of the 19th century. And he, around the city, he excavated shafts, deep pits into the ground. You can see one here. You can see one here. And so, actually, he learned about where the natural rock in Jerusalem is. Originally, when he came to Jerusalem, he came with a letter which was written by Queen Victoria asking the Ottoman Sultan to enable him to do on the Temple Mount the same type of exploration, to try and to find what is there left of the ancient temples. When he came to Jerusalem, he did it. He did a lot of work on the Temple Mount, which is actually the only archaeological exploration which were made on the Temple Mount ever. Because since then, since his days, and if of course before, in spite of the fact that he had a letter written by the Sultan enable him to do the work, the local guardians of the Dome of the Rock threw him out before he finished to do his exploration. But the importance of his work on the Temple Mount cannot be overlooked. It is so important, which gives us the possibility, actually it gives me the possibility to speak to you today about the beginning of the history of Jerusalem. So now let us go to the next one, and you can see a painter who came with him. You can see the same place. You can see one digging down the shaft. You see the ladder by which he goes down. Another shaft he did here. By the way, this place where this drawing was taken was later a site where I've excavated years after, and you'll hear about it after tomorrow on my lecture, after tomorrow, what I found in this place. As we go, we see a map which was made by Charles Warren. Those of you who can read German will see that it is written, everything is written in German, but it is Warren's work. But Warren did everything in feet and inches. So a German scholar in the beginning of the 20th century, in 1908, translated all the feet and the inches into meters. And so we have what you can see here. All what you see on this this map is, of course, the Temple Mount, which you see all around. But the most important thing which he did was, by doing all those shafts reaching bedrock everywhere, he managed to give us a plan of a hill, which you can see here. Very important, a hill, which is named in the Bible Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah. Many of you may recall the name. When Abraham is taking Isaac to be sacrificed, he tells him, the Bible tells us that he is going to one of the mountains in the land of Moriah. In the book of Chronicles, we hear that Solomon built the temple on Mount Moriah. Today, Mount Moriah is almost completely covered by the Temple Mount platform, which I've shown you before, which was made by Herod the Great. And the only thing which is sticking out from the surface of the fill which makes the Temple Mount is a bit of rock which is protected by the Dome of the Rock. You understand? This site, the summit, or actually the stone which is under the Dome of the Rock, is where the Holy of Holies of the temple was. Very important fact to say that we understand that the sanctity of Jerusalem is connected to Mount Moriah. In other words, I'll say it again because it is important to say, the sanctity of Jerusalem stems from Mount Moriah. You see, no matter what you think, no matter what religion you speak about, Mount Moriah is the source of sanctity. Now I'll go further and say as follows. Where is the sanctity from? You remember I showed you the Dome of the Rock. Why it is called the Dome of the Rock, which means the dome which protects the rock. That's why it is named. I know that in many books, older books, especially in 19th century, they call it the Mosque of Omar, but it is a mistake. The name of it is the Dome of the Rock from the beginning when it was built in 691 AD. Now, you remember when I showed you the sections of the Dome of the Rock, I showed you the cave under the holy rock. This cave is very important to us because you remember that I've explained that it has a pit, a shaft, and a cave down. Very typical tomb of the 23rd century BC, which means 4,300 years ago. It was excavated in the rock with great difficulty. It was before iron was found, and people used tools made of bronze. It is still the Bronze Age, and quite an early phase of the Bronze Age. Those tombs are very interesting. Sometimes the pit, the shaft, can be as deep as 8 meters and down below a cave. In the cave, generally, one person only is buried. And it is important to say that undoubtedly, the man who was buried there must have been of great importance, because such a great work to be done with bronze only for one person, the person must be a person of great importance. Moreover, here, as you can see, this is the Dome of the Rock, and you can see there are two pits here very near. Those two pits are, today they serve as cisterns, have got exactly the same shape, a pit and a cave down below. It was transformed into a cistern only by the Muslims. The importance is that we can say that the sanctity of Mount Moriah stems from the fact that 500 years before Abraham, it became a holy place as a holy cemetery or a cemetery of dignitaries who were visited on certain occasions, and so Mount Moriah became a place of veneration, of worship to people and so on. And this is how the sanctity of Mount Moriah begins. The interesting thing is that the name Mount Moriah was not always understood, because Mount Moriah, the word Moriah in Hebrew, comes from the Hebrew root of to found, to make, to create a new staff. And indeed, the holy rock under the dome of the rock is called in English the stone of foundation. Foundation. The same word, here I go to another thing which will explain to you. Very interestingly, the same root is also in the name of Jerusalem. You remember that in Polish you call it Jerusalima. What is the Yeru? Exactly the same thing as Moriah, to found, to create anew. So the name Jerusalem in Hebrew means Salem founded it. Nothing to do, although everyone knows in Hebrew Yerushalayim, so people think maybe Shalom, peace. Jerusalem is the last city in the world about which we can speak of peace. It was never in peace. It was built and destroyed for at least 23 times, which we can say. Not an easy story. The name Yerushalayim means the God Shalem has founded it. And who is the God Shalem? In the Canaanite pantheon, there were two twin brothers gods. One of them was called Shachar, the other one was called Shalem. Shachar was the god of name, of day, and Shalem was the name of the god of night. So Shalem with Shachar together make one thing complete, and in Hebrew complete is Shalem. Yerushalem, God Salem has founded it. God Shalem has founded it. This is the meaning of the word Jerusalem. Now when I go back to the map, you can see here actually the present Temple Mount is built by Herod the Great, and you can see the Dome of the Rock and the Holy Rock inside, which is the summit of Mount Moriah. Now the blue parts which you see in these pictures are very important. They are cisterns which exist on the Temple Mount, but many of them have got an earlier importance. For example, we know that this is very important because it was actually a kind of a tunnel which was made for a priest when he served in the temple, and you understand the temple was here, and he suddenly was contaminated. I mean, he lost his purity. He had this tunnel to run out and to go and to purify himself again before he's coming back to service in the temple. Another one might have been a sewage canal from under the altar of the temple. So we've got many explanations. Another one was a gate into the Temple Mount. Another one, a gate into the Temple Mount. And so actually we know that they are very, very important. All those cisterns are important. Of special importance are two cisterns. One of them is here and one of them are here. Those are the opening of two ancient gates from the time before Herod the Great, which led into the temple. In other words, you see that thanks to this British archaeologist, Sir Charles Warren, we know so much more about the Temple Mount. Here I brought a reconstruction, only which is very simple and not to scale, but to explain how the present Temple Mount of today is actually built on Mount Moriah and two hills which are to the north. All the rest here was filled in order to create the Temple Mount as we see today. Now we go to the story. Now my lecture begins. What you can see here is a model of Jerusalem, which I have made in one of the museums in Jerusalem, a very important museum, the Bible and Museum. We made many years ago, in 1996, this was a date which all the scholars came to the idea that this was the day or the time when King David made Jerusalem into the capital of Israel. Now, The important thing is as follows. King David is the father of Jerusalem in this respect, that he was the man who made Jerusalem a capital, and actually I will say he was the one to make Jerusalem what Jerusalem is today. And this is why. From the book of Samuel, second book of Samuel, we know that King David ruled in Hebron for 7 years. I will wait a minute. Okay, I will wait a minute. Można? Mogę? Tak, dobrze. I hope the translation goes all right, yes? Wytłumaczenie jest w porządku? Tak, dobrze. Ja bym bardzo chciał mówić po polsku, to był duży lepszy. W porządku. Dobrze, ja idę dalej. Tak, w rok... Now, in the year 1996, the scholars who deal with Old Testament came to the conclusion that this was the time where more or less King David came to Jerusalem after ruling 7 years in Hebron. And remember that when he ruled in Hebron, he was actually a king of the tribe of Judah only, and he wanted to become the king of all of Israel. So he looked for a capital, and Jerusalem was very suitable because Jerusalem was in the middle between all the tribes. It did not belong to anybody, although in the division of the country into the tribes, it was on the tribe of Benjamin, who was a tribe which was liked by everybody, and no political problems. So what did he do? He comes to Jerusalem, and the Bible says that when he comes from Hebron, he comes with all the people with him. All the people. In Hebrew, the word people and nation is the same word. So actually, I can say that he came with all his nation into to Jerusalem. The first thing which he did after coming to Jerusalem, he brought the Ark of the Covenant. He brought the Ark of the Covenant from the place where it was outside of Jerusalem. And again, the Bible says, and he went, and all the people with him. King David created an equation which is, this is what can explain to you why Jerusalem is what it is. First of all, a capital. Number two, a nation. A nation, because as I say, he brought the nation to Jerusalem. Jerusalem, till his days, was a pagan city of Canaanites, of Jebusites, of Hittites, and all kind of others. He brought the people in it. So we've got in the equation, we've got the city, we've got a nation. And a very important thing, which is important also to the Christian world, he brought to Jerusalem a dynasty. The dynasty of King David came to Jerusalem, and I don't have to tell you, when you open the book of Matthew and you read the genealogy of Jesus, remember the part which is played by King David. And that's why I will say it in a kind of a very not formal way. Jesus had to die as he was in Bethlehem, born where David was born. He had to die in Jerusalem, in which David died. So you see, by bringing the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, he brought God to Jerusalem. So what makes Jerusalem, Jerusalem is city, nation, dynasty, and God. Try to say that maybe I'm not objective because I'm a part of the nation which is mentioned there, but try to explain otherwise why Jerusalem is so holy. If you remove this equation, you will not understand why Jerusalem is holy. That's what makes it so important. When we made this exhibition, we wanted to show all the capitals of the ancient world. And we made model to every city. We made to Nineveh, we made to Assur, we went to Luxor in Egypt, we made to Bogoske of the Hittites in Turkey, and of course a model of Jerusalem. And what you can see here is a picture of this city, where you can see the temple, the area around the temple, the palaces of King Solomon, the citadel of David, and the expansion of the city in the days of Hezekiah. So we know quite well why Jerusalem is so famous already in the Old Testament. Now, when you read the Bible in Hebrew, the name of Jerusalem is always Yerushalem. And that is the way, that's why in English Jerusalem, and in all the other languages, Jerusalem in Spanish, Jerusalem in Italian, and all the others. But in Hebrew we call it Yerushalayim. Now, very important to mention, when King Hezekiah annexed the hill of Mount Zion to the city became suddenly a double city. First of all, the hill of the city of David and the Temple Mount, and this addition. In Hebrew, the double always ends with ayim, like oznaim, einaim, raglaim, yadaim, always. And so, from Jerusalem, in the beginning of the Old Testament, it becomes Yerushalayim, as we call it, to this very day. So you see that already in the Old Testament time, Jerusalem as a whole is already a holy city, more or less accepted as a very important city because of reasons which I've explained, and so on. One of the problems are that in the last, I will say, 2 decades, the last 20 years, there are many people who start to challenge the fact that David really was such a great king to do all the things which I'm mentioning and I'm attributing to him. The reason is that the city of David, you remember this little low hill which I've showed to begin with, this is a little hill, tiny, nothing is left. When you want to find King David, you don't find it. Remember that I've mentioned that Jerusalem was conquered and destroyed so many times. So therefore, to find something from the days of King David is almost impossible. But few years ago, one of our colleagues, a very good friend, she excavated an area which was never excavated before, because I want to tell you that always people believed that biblical Jerusalem, Old Testament Jerusalem, was on Mount Zion. But it is not true. It is on the little hill which we call the city of David. And since it was discovered only in 1880, many archaeologists jump into digging in this part to find all the great things. And so archaeologists of the 19th century or the beginning of 20th century were really destroyed the city. It was very hard. They didn't know archaeology as we know today. So one of my colleagues, she found a corner in the hill of the city of David which was never touched before, and so she decided to dig it, and she found what you see here in the picture. Very poor remains. You can see only some ritual, the same picture, some ritual, you know, structures, some poor stones, but all this we know that these are remains of a public, important, strong building which was built in the 10th century, in the time of King David. In other words, since it was not destroyed by previous archaeologists, and since it was preserved in a place which was not touched, remains of the time of David can be found in the hill there. Moreover, in order to fight those, as we call them, the revisionist archaeologists who say King David is only a legend, fortunately enough, in the northern town of the Galilee, which is called Dan, was discovered a big monument which was laid by the king of Aram, another kingdom north of Israel, and he had a war against Israel, and he won the battle. So he left a monument. And in this monument, which is Israel, about 100 years after King David, when he wants to speak about Israel, not Judah, you remember, it was after the country was split into Judah and Israel, he still calls Israel the house of David, which means his memory of David is so great. Moreover, In the last, I will say, about 5-6 years, excavations were carried west of Jerusalem in the lowland of the mountain. You know, the Jerusalem is about between 700 and 800 meters above sea level. In the lowland was discovered a city, which was a place where David fought Goliath, very famous battle, which everybody knows. And there was, in that city, was found a piece of a pottery written, inscribed on pottery, and the, what is described there are the laws which are imposed from the capital Jerusalem, and they all speak about things which you know from the Bible, like do not oppress the widow, be nice to the orphan, and all the laws for justice which we know from the book of Numbers. We see it here written from the times of King David. In other words, we can say that not only King David founded a state, but also founded a legal system, which is repeated and said in the Bible. So this is about the first temple. Jerusalem is developing. The first temple existed, let's say, by King Solomon, who built it in around 960 BC, and it existed till the Babylonians destroyed it in 586 BC. So it existed for quite a long time, about 400 years. The temple was center of life. It was robbed many times and came back to its great beauty, but the temple always existed. The temple was destroyed, as I say, 586 BC. Then come back the repatriates from Babylon. They come to a city which is poor, partly destroyed. In the archaeology, we discovered many sites which were burned by the Babylonians. In some places, we even discovered the remains of the battle by arrows which were stuck into buildings. So altogether, our knowledge of the destruction is quite well known also and proved by archaeology. By the way, many of the things which were discovered then comply very well to the Bible, like private seals of people whose name we also know from the Old Testament as scribes, the people who wrote for the kings, the people who wrote documents. We know the name not only from the Old Testament, but also the private seals were discovered in excavations. So you can see that our knowledge of that city is very great. The city was poor. The city was poor after the repatriates from Babylon came, and it took time to reorganize the city. And only after 70 years after the destruction, the Jews, now they hear the first time the word Jews, because first they were called Israelites, they were called Hebrews, all kind of names. But when they came from Babylon, and mostly they were all descendants of the tribes of Judah, so therefore the name, the first time that we hear the name referring to our people as Jews, which is Jews is coming actually from the name of Judah. Yes, that's how the name comes. And since then, the people of the country are named Jews, not before. Now, they managed to build a temple which was just to serve. So remember, we have 70 years where there was no temple till the temple was inaugurated. Therefore, the term 70 is very important. I don't know if you remember that the Pope in Rome went to exile to Avignon in France. You remember that this is named in the Christian literature as an exile of Babylon of the Holy See. Yes, because to Avignon. Yes, because it was 70 years exactly at the time where the temple was lacking in Jerusalem. Now the temple was built. It was a poor temple. People cried when they saw the temple as it was built anew. But immediately, exactly as the temple was poor, what you see here in the picture is already the vision of Ezekiel, how he saw the temple in the middle of big courtyard and so on. I mention it. And it was easy to reconstruct to such details, not because only Ezekiel was envisioning it, and you can see it is just his vision. But there is another important thing. Among the scrolls which come from the Dead Sea Scroll, among the Dead Sea Scroll, is one scroll which is named the Temple Scroll, and there is a description of the temple, and this comes from the Temple Scroll. So we know that there was a great importance for the Jews to maintain the temple and to have it. Now, this is a vision of a French scholar in the 19th century, how the second temple really was. And as you can see here, it is more or less, even the scholars today will agree with many things in this program and will not agree in others. But altogether, the impression of the temple as one of the greatest structures of the time is beyond doubt. I would like to tell you that Herod's the Great Temple is the largest religious monument of the Greco-Roman period. It is an amazing structure. I'll speak about it tomorrow and after tomorrow. Really an amazing structure which has, no other equivalent. It doesn't resemble anything. It doesn't resemble any Greek temple. It doesn't resemble any of the temples in the Middle East with all its religions and so on. It is really a unique structure. Here I bring a picture which shows a reconstruction of the western wall of the Temple Mount. You can see at the top, you can see the temple, which was whitewashed every year for Passover. It was whitewashed and clean. Down below, you see the white square is today's praying western wall, where the Jews are praying today, you know, the Wailing Wall, which is so famous in the world. But all the rest shows you how the temple was. Now, the Jerusalem in the Second Temple period was really the Jewish center of thoughts, the Jewish center on all respect, as it is today. I don't know if you know that a Jew is praying for Jerusalem six times a day. He's mentioning Jerusalem three times in the three daily prayers and three times when he prays for the food, you know, the blessing on the food. So altogether, you understand how much it is. Many came to Jerusalem. Three annual pilgrimages were to Jerusalem, and people who came, let's say, from the Galilee, who came from the southern part of the country, from all over, when they come to Jerusalem, they go to the pool of Siloam, and they baptize themselves in the pool to purify themselves in order to go to the temple. What you see in this picture is one of the greatest discoveries made in the last decades in Jerusalem. Here you see the pool of Siloam, the steps going down into the pool. We actually could not dig the whole pool because a great part of it belongs to the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate. And in Jerusalem, as you know, we protect very strict way all the rights of the non-Jewish religions. So therefore, since we are coming into terms with the Greek Patriarch, maybe to extend, because the pool of Siloam is also holy for him, because you remember that Jesus made one of his miracles there, healing the blind there. There was a Byzantine empress whose name was Eudokia, and she decided that this is not the proper place because it was already covered in her days, and she invented another holy place as being the pool of Siloam. But only the excavations which we are doing here, only this excavation proved the right place. Moreover, these very days, we are excavating a street which leads all the way from the pool of Siloam all the way to the Temple Mount. In other words, after you are pure, you can go on to the Temple Mount and do your prayers there. Now we come to the point where the street comes to, and you can see enormous flight of steps. All this, it goes all the way. And why they are here? Because here is one of the gates to the temple. Another one is here. You cannot see it so well in this picture. This is to me a very, 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 very important sight. Because both for us and the Christians, the city in the time of Herod, which is so great, you see, this is the western wall, the southern wall of the Temple Mount. Why is it so important? Because this is the background to all the stories which you have in the Gospels. All the stories of the Gospels are created in the background, of Herodian Jerusalem. Now I'll tell you something which is very important to say. When a pilgrim comes today to Jerusalem, there are two levels of his visit to the city. One of them is the emotional level. You are coming to the city where Jesus was, where Jesus suffered, where Jesus resurrected, and all the stories which we know from the New Testament are in Jerusalem. And what is more exciting than to go along the Via Dolorosa, coming to the tomb of Jesus? This is an experience which is spiritual, mental, exciting, and I personally, as an archaeologist, I appreciate it very, very much, because I see this is the function of the archaeologist. And this is the second level, to say what is the historical, archaeological truth about the holy sites. And sometimes they are different. And I'll tell you something about myself. I'm one of the greatest protectors of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, as the true place where Jesus was crucified and buried. You see, as a Jewish person, if I say so, you can be sure that this is what it is. So here in Poland, I can tell you a story. On this background, I was invited by Pope Jan Paweł II to an audience, and I sat with him, imagine, sat with him for almost 2 hours speaking about the holy places in Jerusalem. It was such a great privilege that very few people in the world can be proud about it. And first of all, he was happy that I spoke Polish, which was very funny. Although we have another language in common, which is Italian. I speak fluently Italian, and he speaks fluently Italian. So we could see, but he preferred it all in Polish. Why do I say that? Since I am such a protector of the Holy Sepulchre, I've got the liberty to deliberate about other holy places. You see, to say this is true and this is not true. I just showed you the Pool of Siloam, which is a true and holy place. In this case, why did I bring it here? There is another pool, the Pool of Bethesda, which is also the true place where Jesus healed the paralytic. Now, why do I bring this picture here? There is a Christian tradition that Jesus entered Jerusalem through the Golden Gate, which is the eastern gate to the temple. It is impossible, because the eastern gate of the temple was used only for the red heifer, this red cow, which was taken out from the Temple Mount after a certain process of celebrations. It was taken out to the Mount of Olives, where it was sacrificed and burned to ashes, which were needed for purification. Another one, at the eve of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, there was this goat which was taken. You know, the two goats were brought to the temple. One was condemned to death and one was condemned to life. The one condemned for death was taken out from the eastern gate. So Jesus could not come in to a gate which was only used to go out. I believe that Jesus, when he came from Galilee, when he comes to Jerusalem, the only possibility for him to enter was from the south, and undoubtedly he was walking on the steps which you see here on the slide. And when archaeologists say it, and when archaeologists have got proof to it, it is very interesting. For example, when one of the times when Jesus, when he was 12 years old, he comes to Jerusalem, you remember he discusses the things with his rabbi, with the rabbi. He discusses the law with the rabbis, and everyone was astonished. It must have been on those steps. Why do I say it? Because we've got in the Talmud a story that there were three tribunals in Jerusalem, was one on the step. Moreover, one of the most important rabbis, actually the most important rabbi in the days of Jesus, was Rabban Gamliel. That was his name, Gamliel. And the Talmud says that he was standing on the steps preaching to the people. So you cannot run away that when you stand here on those steps, you are standing right at the place where Jesus, being 12 years old, taught the rabbis. Very, very important. Now, at this point, I want to stop and say something which is extremely important for me when I tell the history of the city. And this is this one. In 1947, when we had all the discussions, or the United Nations had all the discussions about founding a Jewish state, which was later named Israel, or not, the United Nations published a map of Jerusalem with the holy places. So in the holy Jewish places were marked in blue. The Christian holy places in red. The Muslim holy places in green. And that's how they decided this will guide the United Nations to decide what the future of Jerusalem was. But it was a stupid thing to do. And I'll tell you why. In Judaism, there is no holy places. There is only one holy place, which is the temple in Jerusalem, or the place where the temple was. That's all. Jerusalem, Judaism, is a concept. You cannot put every synagogue to say, because of this synagogue, and this synagogue, and this synagogue, Jerusalem is holy. You see, it was a mistake. Christian story is different. Because Christian story is, because that's a city where Jerusalem came, preached, talked, suffered, and resurrected. So this is important, because this you can stick to holy places to say, this happened here, and this happened here. And therefore, the more you add churches and sites which are important, like Holy Sepulchre, the Mount Zion, where the Holy Spirit came on the apostles, the tomb of the Virgin, the tomb of Jesus, summit of Mount of Olives, where the ascension was after his second visit to Jerusalem. All this is holy places which you have to mark, and they are meaningful. What is not meaningful is in Islam, because in Islam the only thing is the legend that Muhammad came in a nocturnal flight to Jerusalem. He landed in Jerusalem, from which he ascended to heaven. So therefore you've got two mosques, to one which he landed, which is called the Aqsa Mosque, and the one from which he ascended to heaven is the Dome of the Rock. All the rest are, again, they are little mosques of no importance, no historical importance, nothing. They are all, you know, merchants in the street who want to pray. Instead of going all the way to the Temple Mount, what do? They took one room and they made it into a mosque to pray during lunchtime when they go to the daily prayer. They pray. This was marked as a Muslim holy place, but it is meaningless. It is made, you know, just for the use, a kind of utility mosque. Nothing to do. As a holy place, only you cannot take such a room and make it a holy place. In other words, I say that the essence of Jerusalem is to understand the difference of the holiness for Jews as a concept to the Christian as holy places, a city where Christ, as I said, taught, preached, suffered, resurrected, and on the other hand, Muslim, where there is an event which is altogether a legend. Remember that Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran at all. It was not of importance. The contrary, they saw it as a concurrence, as a rival to Mecca and Medina. You see, so it's a different story altogether. So from now on, we go further. So you see that by saying that this is the place where Jesus taught and said and showed as a 12 years old, showed the rabbis his knowledge and so on, we can say that archaeology not only say these sites are wrong, but he says, look, we have added another important holy, so to call it, holy places in Jerusalem. You understand that? It's a kind of, we have got a kind of reciprocative relations between the written, the documents, Old Testament, New Testament, and what archaeology does and says about the Jerusalem. Now you see, this is a stone which was discovered on this, those steps. And the important thing is, that here you have got the word, the broken kuf nun yud mem zkenim. Zkenim in Hebrew, in ancient Hebrew, is sages, rabbis, and so on. We believe that this is a part of an inscription which say to everybody, when you go on these steps, this corner is preserved for the elders, for the rabbis. So this adds to us the possibility that indeed that is where they were standing on those steps and discussing with Jesus the problem. Another site which shows us the history of Jerusalem becoming a holy city, and that's what adds so much to the history of the city, is the Garden of Gethsemane. In the Garden of Gethsemane, you've got six olive trees. Gethsemane means the Garden of Olive Trees, actually, in Hebrew. And you can see here one of them. Look how old they are, how thick they are. And the Israeli scholars from the Hebrew University, one of the six trees started to die. So they excavated the hole all through the trunk to check what is the reason for its problem. Actually, they solved it. It is still existing, the tree. It is healthy and nice. But when they counted the rings, they came to the conclusion that it is 2,000 years old. So actually, I say from our point of view, Jesus could definitely rest in the Garden of Gethsemane under the trees. Some years ago, with to the year of the Jubilee, in 2000, two Italian universities, one of them is from Pisa, the other one I don't remember from where, they came to the conclusion that it is only 900 years old, which means that if it became holy by the Crusaders. I don't know where it is. I prefer the 2000 because I want really to see Jerusalem as it was in the days of the New Testament. Of course, here I bring, this is something, a site which is very important for a visit to Israel. In the Israel Museum, there is now, it was transferred from elsewhere, a model of Jerusalem as it was in the time of Jesus, in the time of Herod the Great, in the time of the Second Temple period. And there you can see the archaeologist who did it, who was my professor, and he is the one who planted in me the love for Jerusalem, Professor Aviona. He made here the Hill of Golgotha. I'll go back, I did a mistake. You see the Hill of Golgotha. I know today that it is different. He was wrong in the way he put it. I know, I don't know if somebody has been to Jerusalem, has been the Hill of Golgotha. Has there anybody been into Jerusalem? Yes. I don't know if you remember that the Hill of Golgotha looks much more like a column, much more than the hill with the slope, because of various things. Next time, one day I'll speak about the Holy Sepulchre. You'll see it is a fascinating building. It is one of the most exciting buildings I've seen in my life. So many periods together, each one added, and I know that all the pilgrims who come to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre are completely puzzled. All the chapels and the walls and the thing, no one understands what's going on here. But it's a beautiful building when you understand what it is. At any rate, this is again the Pool of Siloam. I brought a better picture. All the time I want to show you that it was such an important factor in the history of Jerusalem altogether. There is still water there to this very day. Here you can see the famous pools of Bethesda. Again, very important event in the history. Another very interesting thing is, very important, I don't know if you know that when the classical world was tired of the Greek-Roman religion, was tired of the Greek-Roman religion, people started to look for a real religion, not with the gossip with the gods, the Zeus, Jupiter is running after this woman and after that woman, Hera is very jealous and she pursues them and all kind of things. So they decided that it is too much, and slowly, people started to look for different religions. One of the religions was Mistra, for example. Another one was Judaism. And here comes Christianity, which becomes so important, and it adds to the importance of Jerusalem. Because more and more Christians, you know how first they were persecuted, I don't have to tell you the story, and Jerusalem becomes more important and more important in the eyes of the Roman world, where many converted either to Judaism or to Christianity. There was one nation who then converted entirely from king to the pauper. Very important kingdom. It is called the kingdom of Adiabene. They built even the tomb in Jerusalem. And what you see here is a picture of the sarcophagus of one of the queens of this kingdom. You can see here is written, there is an inscription. We know who the name of the woman who is buried here. He was a queen mother to the kings of this kingdom, which was called Adiabene. I bring it only to show you that when Plinius said that Jerusalem is the most famous city in the East, the background was really the admiration for Jerusalem, not only by the Jews, but also by others who converted. The Christians whom you start to see all over the classical world. The Jews are going, because of economical reasons, are living and to live in Rome and other places all over Europe at that time. I'm not Europe so much, the Mediterranean area. So really, Jerusalem gains importance so much. Jerusalem is destroyed. I'm sorry, I'm talking too much. Anyhow, Jerusalem is destroyed. The Romans built Jerusalem anew, as I've explained to you. I showed you the plain of the Roman city. What I show you here in the picture is the temple of Jupiter, or the Christian triad, which is Jupiter, Juno, and Minerva, on a site on which later Constantine the Great built the first church of the Holy Sepulchre. What you can see here, the facade of the Roman temple, which was later will become the facade of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And one of the church fathers, and we know about it from the church fathers, there are so many. The most important was Hieronymus of Bethlehem, who is such an important that he tells us a story. For example, we know that Constantine the Great, when he built the church of the Holy Sepulchre on the site of the temple, one of the things he did was to embellish it, to make it more beautiful, and he covered all the Roman remains. If you look at the picture here, you can see that the stones of the temple were taken from the destroyed Jewish temple. You can see the same type of stones. Who those who've been to Jerusalem and went to the wall of, to the Wailing Wall, they could see that where the Jews are praying, exactly the same type of stones you can see with the frames and everything. So what did Constantine do? He covered it all with marble slabs. And you can see here the nails. You see the nails of the nails in which they attached the marble there. So our knowledge of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is really great. Here is another picture. You can see exactly the size of the marble slabs which are covering the church, and even one of the entrances into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Today it is blocked because it belongs today to the Muslims. One of the most exciting things, in order to know that there was a Christian community in Jerusalem who are coming to Jerusalem, is what you see here. This was found during excavations under the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And it shows a boat under which there is an inscription, Domine Ivimos, O God, we have come. Who did it? First of all, it is done in the 2nd century AD. Why second century? Because all the scholars who deal with Roman seafaring say that the boat is typical to the second century. Why is the importance so great? Because till this discovery, all what we knew in Jerusalem are the stories of the New Testament. And the first time when we see remains are only under Constantine in the 4th century, which means we have got 300 years of gap, of which we know nothing about holy, about Christians living in Jerusalem, doing things in Jerusalem. And suddenly we discover, under the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, we discover a testimony of a Christian pilgrim who comes to the place and says to Dominus, you know that this is the way by which Christians called Jesus, Dominus, we came to see you. Jesus, we came to see you. And this is the first time that we have Christian testimony to the fact that there are, that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the place where you come to visit. It adds to the authenticity of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and the importance is great. Because of that, we know that this is the beginning of a new period in the history of Jerusalem. Because when under Constantine, Jerusalem, out of a pagan city, becomes a city of Christianity, what we call the Byzantine period, which will last for hundreds of years, 300 years exactly, because Constantine finished to build a church in 335 AD. Jerusalem was conquered by the Muslims 638, which means you've got 303 years of Byzantine Jerusalem. For us, the Jews, it was a tragedy, because Jews were not allowed to live in Jerusalem. And imagine Jews, imagine the Jews who cannot come and see the holy city. It was a great, great agony for the Jews, but they were all around Jerusalem. They looked at it from distance, and for them, there was always a belief that one day Jerusalem will be again with Jewish presence in it. Now, this is the famous story. This is the Empress Helena, which, according to the Christian tradition, she was the one to find the holy relics of the crucifixion, and that's why her son Constantinus built the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. But it's historically, it's not true, because the first time that Helena is mentioned as doing something in Jerusalem was by a famous Spanish pilgrim, a woman named Egeria. I don't know if anybody has heard about her. Extremely important, because she was the first one to show what the Christians are doing in Jerusalem, what is the ritual, when do they read the Mass, when do they pray a day, and so on. The important thing only to say that contemporary to Helena was the bishop of Caesarea, whose name was Eusebius. And he tells us that she discovered the place of the cradle of Jesus in the Church of the Nativity. She discovered the cave where Jesus taught his pupils when he ascended to heaven from Mount of Olives. He doesn't say a word about her discovering the remains in when she was in Jerusalem, he was there. He doesn't say anything about who, how did Constantine know, how did he know where the Jews, where Jesus was crucified and so on. The only way we can explain it is when Emperor Hadrian in his days forbade the Jews to come and live in Jerusalem, a prohibition which continued in the Byzantine period, he did not say the Jews, but he said the circumcised. But then already there was a Christian community of people who did not circumcise their son. And those Christians who were uncircumcised, they were the ones to go and pray at that place, as we know from the Church Father. So that's how Constantine knew where to build the church. I'm only giving it to you only to explain how Jerusalem suddenly becomes a world-renowned city. It continues the tradition of a very well-known city in the East, as says Plinius, and suddenly we see that also with the victory of Christianity, Jerusalem is no more a provincial city in the Roman Empire, but really spiritual capital of the world. And this is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Many of you know about it. Many parts are, only the rotunda originates in the time of Constantine. The structure which you see today, the edicula, where the tomb of Jesus is something, as we see today, is only from the 19th century, when it was the Crusader edicula was destroyed by the Greeks and built by them again. Here are the remains of the church. There are some remains which are very concrete. This is the main gate. This is the main gate. This is the main gate which you see here. This one side, another side. This is Crusader, was added later. But we have the gate. You remember I told you about the Pool of Siloam. We know the true one. But we know that Empress Eudoxia in the 5th century built another church in another site where she believes this was the place where the Pool of Siloam, where Jesus healed the blind. Unfortunately, you see, we have got an exact picture of it. But the problem was that when it was excavated in 1894, the Muslims say, they're going to build another church, and on top of it, they built a mosque, and so the whole church disappeared. But it is important to say that we know exactly how it was. Then comes another story to show you how the city is progressing more and more. In the 5th century, another pilgrim comes to Jerusalem. This time he was from Piacenza in Italy, and you can see, when he sees one of the towers which are left from the time of Herod, you can see here the beautiful Herodian remains. The top is Muslim, but all the way down below, he says this must have been the palace of King David. And since then it is called the Tower of David, which is one of the towers which were built by Herod the Great. Later, Frederick II, the emperor of the German Empire, built this one in the 13th century. But altogether, it will interest you. Yesterday I went to see the monument of Grünwald, you know, of the victory over the Teutons. This was built by the Teutons in Jerusalem, Hermann von Salza, the founder of the order of the Teutons in Jerusalem. So you see that the city is actually moving from one holy place to the other. Also, a great church was built, which was called the New Church of the Virgin. Very, very, very important. Maybe one of the greatest events in Christian Jerusalem. You know that when the Romans conquered, destroyed the temple, they took the holy tools, you know, like the candelabrum and all that, they took to Rome. When the Vandals managed to found a state in Tunisia of today, they made incursions to Rome, they robbed Rome, that's why we speak about vandalism. But they also took the holy relics from the temple, they took to Tunisia. Few years after they did it, Emperor Justinian, 540, conquered Tunisia. And all the things he brought from there were the holy relics from the temple. For him, as a Christian emperor, it was very important to have. But all his advisors told him, don't hold it here. Because every place where the holy relics were there was destroyed. So was Jerusalem, then it was Rome, then it was Tunis, and if you leave it here, it will be also destroyed. So he sent it to Jerusalem, to a big church which he built. This church was amazingly big. It was so big, we know exactly where it was because excavations discovered parts of it. But what you see here is the lintel of the church, and you can see it is upside down, reused by the Muslims. You can see here, it is very difficult to see. I don't know if you can see here Alpha. I don't know if you can see upside down Alpha. And here is an Omega, but it's very difficult to see because the Muslims shaved it away. This comes from the same place, and the Muslims, in order to find the holy relics, destroyed the church, and they built other monuments with it. I'll run now quickly just to show you a map, a Christian map of the Holy Land, where you can see beautifully the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. We saw before a picture of this gate here, then a gate of this. This one is lost. Steps leading to the church. The golden dome over the tomb of Jesus. This is what gave the idea to the Muslims to build the Dome of the Rock with golden dome as you see today, because they copied the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Very important. The Temple Mount of the Muslims is actually a copy of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre of Constantine the Great. Now, this is the map which shows the Holy Land. As together, you see here Jerusalem, the Holy Sepulchre, the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, and all the other things. Unfortunately, I don't have enough time to tell you the whole story of the thing, so we have to run away. Then already, all the bishoprics of Jerusalem, of the country, was founded. This is a map of Transjordan, and you can see here all the cities of the country, each one by name. Jerusalem is, of course, the first. Here, all the bishoprics, or all the bishops of Jerusalem were. And you know what? In the Greek Orthodox Church, which is an heir to the Byzantine Empire, to this very day, they maintain the same bishopric. For example, I've got a friend who is a priest in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, but his title is the Bishop of Mount Tabor, because Mount Tabor is one of the bishoprics of the Byzantine Empire. They still maintain it. You see that the period between 335 to 638 is a period which formed actually a lot of the habits of the Christian world referring to Jerusalem, to the holy places, to the church organization in Jerusalem were already created there. You see here, you can see Hagia Polis, which is Jerusalem. Hagia Polis, which is this one, Neapolis, another bishopric, Sebastis, another. They're all cities which exist to this very day. Today there are no bishoprics, but they still, there are priests who bear the title in order to maintain the order which we see over 1400 years ago. Very, very important to show the formative city of Christianity. One of the highlights of Christianity is the Golden Gate, which is in the eastern side. This is the last Christian monument of Jerusalem before the Muslims are coming. I don't know if you know, one of the holiest days in the Catholic calendar is the day of the Exaltation of the Cross, which is 14th of September. You know why? Because on this day, in 630, Emperor Heraclius brought the Holy Cross through this gate into Jerusalem after it was taken and redeemed from captivity from the Persians who conquered Jerusalem 15 years before. So a holy day which you know, a day which you know which is holy, I can tell you it is because what you see in this picture. You see, so altogether you can see the mixture of stories, myth, the daily life of today of the Christian world all comes around Jerusalem. And I'll run quickly only to show you that all over. For example, these are two ampullas with holy water which was brought from the Holy Land to Italy. These are two ampullas which are found in the treasury of the Cathedral of Monza next to Milan, where you can see, if you can see here very well, the tomb of Jesus. You can see it here, and you can see the tomb of Jesus here. You see how exciting it is. The whole world is celebrating Jerusalem. And finally comes Muhammad. And when Muhammad comes, everything changes. The belief is that he came to Jerusalem. I'm terribly vicious. I'm terribly bad person. Because I say Muhammad died in 632. Jerusalem was conquered by the Muslims 638, 6 years later. In other words, when Muhammad came to Jerusalem, allegedly, it was a Christian city. The Christians wrote about Jerusalem a lot, but no one wrote about a person running on a horse in the sky. But that is actually the belief. You can see here Muhammad is flying. You see that you are not allowed to show his picture. That's why it is white. And angel Gabriel is bringing him in the sky with all the angels bringing him to Jerusalem. And that is actually the story, the same picture, more clear to see. And that's how actually the Dome of the Rock is built. Who built the Dome of the Rock? Christians built the Dome of the Rock. Muslims, the savages from the Arabian Peninsula, didn't know to build. Even the Kaaba which is the holiest place in Islam, was built by Ethiopian Christians because they did not want to build. So what did they do? They saw the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. They said, we will bring something better. And they built the church, the Dome of the Rock and the Aqsa Mosque. Aqsa Mosque and Dome of the Rock together are a copy of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. If you don't believe me in that, if you go inside, around the dome, six times it repeats, don't believe in Jesus as the Son of God. God is one complete and intact. He never gave its birth to a son. God is one complete and closed. So this inscription repeats six times. It was an anti-Christian declaration, this one. Anti-Christian declaration. Work is Byzantine. The mosaics are typical, as you see in Italy, for example, in Ravenna of the same time, more or less. So altogether, it's a different story. This is the cave I told you about, which is underneath. They worship it now, but we know it is a burial cave of the Canaanite period. All is completely, they had to adjust themselves to many effects. I bring here only one thing, a part of the decoration of the Dome of the Rock, which is a beautiful, 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 beautiful building. And there, one of the decoration is this one. I don't know. It looks like a flower. No. They remember that at the same site. Remember, I told you the Dome of the Rock is on the site of the Holy of Holies of the Temple. How did the Muslims know about it? Because Jews told them. There is a whole story which you know in Islamic sources, in Jewish sources, telling that the Jews showed them where it is. And what you can see here, you know what it is? It is a crown of the Byzantine emperors and the Persian kings. You know, the crowns there cover the head completely. And you see the bottom with pearls hanging down below. You can see this is actually, you see this is the hat which they wore, for example. And here you have got this. The Byzantine emperor have here something also, a medal or something. Most famous of this style, which still exists today, is the crown of Hungary. Yes, I don't know if anybody has been to Budapest and seen in the temple, in the treasury of the museum. You can see the crown of Matyas, and you can see, instead of this here, you can see a cross, but before a reason, which I don't know, the cross is a bit crooked if somebody has seen it in Budapest, because I know that Poland is connected in many ways to Hungary, so I thought maybe you know it. So that actually to show you that they knew the past of Jerusalem as a Christian and Jewish temple built by Solomon, who was a king. So altogether, really, this is the Aqsa Mosque, which is a copy of the Basilica of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and the rest will have to leave, I'm afraid. You see, I compared. On the left-hand side, you've got the pagan temple in Baalbek in Lebanon. On the right-hand side, the temple in Jerusalem. You see how they are. I should have brought also the Church of the Holy Sepulchre here, and to show you the resemblance between all of them. So that's actually what I wanted to tell you. I must stop because I'm afraid I can continue till tomorrow. So come tomorrow again at 2 o'clock. I've got another one. Thank you very much. Thank you.